a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They pay paradise, put up a parking lot.
If they keep on following
see a windmill go, feel the pull of an ocean wave, the heat from a volcano. There's so much we could do, there's so much we could know, if we listen to the earth.
Welcome. Glad you can join us for Ecologic. Clean air and water are healthy air and water. Every day is Earth Day. I'm Ken Gale.
And I'm Sally Gellert. Donna Stein can't be here today. She's working the early polls, but she's been involved in producing and promoting this episode. This is Ecologic for Wednesday, March 27th, 2024.
When your air or water are clean, thank an environmentalist. If not, become one. Enough said.
Our guest today is energy expert Andy Padian, but first, Earth Overshoot Day, legislation promoting water access, and why nuclear energy makes climate change worse.
March 14th, in addition to being Pi Day, was this year's Earth Overshoot Day for the United States. That is the calculated day on which humanity's resource consumption for the year would exceed Earth's capacity to regenerate those resources that year if everyone lived like the U.S. population. For the world as a whole, Earth Overshoot Day this year is July 25th. According to the Global Footprint Network, until the early 1970s, human consumption was within Earth's capacity to regenerate annually. We are on track to require two planets' resources by the middle of the century.
Utility Justice last week noted World Water Day, March 22nd, with a plea to Congress to pass the Water Act. That's the Water Affordability, Transparency, Equity, and Reliability Act of 2023, H.R. 1729 and S. 938, sponsored by New Jersey's Representative Bonnie Watson Coleman and 67 other original co-sponsors. The current count is 91, from 32 states and the District of Columbia. Utility Justice noted that Health and Human Services' new report, providing the first national snapshot of water debt, including that one in five households overall and one in three indigenous households are in water debt. Also, 5% of households experienced a water shutoff in 2022, the same percentage as Utility Justice found in 2018.
Past Ecologic guest Kevin Camps has an article on UtilityDive.com explaining why nuclear power will make the climate crisis worse. He points out the government subsidies, from direct subsidies to government insurance via the Price-Anderson Act, which indemnifies nuclear plant owners at public expense. Quoting from the article, massive taxpayer-funded bailouts for existing plants and untested advanced, in quotes, reactors are sailing through state houses and Congress. Nuclear subsidies remain sacrosanct during the fiscal year 24 federal budget fight, even as conservatives demanded cuts in almost everything else, end quote. Small modular reactors, SMRs, lack safety standards. Based on current designs, they're estimated to generate up to 30 times more radioactive waste per unit of electricity than existing conventional reactors. And if they ever do get built, SMRs won't be remotely competitive with renewables. Senator Joe Manchin said that he won't support any nominee to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission who's too focused on safety. Nuclear reactors are for taking money from consumers and taxpayers more than they're for generating electricity. The article has a lot of links within it, so there's a lot of data for those of you who want more. We link to it on our website, ecoradio.org. Kevin ends his article with, "Today's misguided focus on nuclear power is diverting us from renewables, storage, and efficiency, hobbling us in our race against climate chaos. Wasting large amounts of time and money on the false solution of nuclear power will not solve the climate crisis and will aggravate nuclear risks."
Tomorrow is the 45th anniversary of the Three Mile Island nuclear accident. There are some events going on to commemorate it. The Sierra Club and Beyond Nuclear will host a discussion of the film Radioactive, The Women of Three Mile Island, at 8 p.m. tomorrow evening. Speakers include director Heidi Huttner, Mary Olson of the Gender and Radiation Impact Project, Navajo guests Anna Rondon and Crystal Curley, and Professor Mark Jacobson of Stanford University. Cindy Fulkers will moderate. We have a registration link on ecoradio.org. I think you'll need a Zoom account to register.
And this is Talking Heads singing, "Don't Worry About the Government." Talking Heads singing, "Don't Worry About the Government."
Now we welcome Andy Padian. Hi, Andy. Please introduce yourself.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can. Yay.
We can.
Okay, good. My Zoom went down, so I'm calling in on the phone. I apologize. I'm Andy Padian. I'm kind of known as an energy efficiency guy. I'm primarily a field person solving problems in existing buildings. When I'm done today, I have to look at 17 buildings this afternoon just to see how wasteful they are, and they're horrifically wasteful. A lot of the stuff I do are energy audits in buildings. I've challenged people on this before, but I think I've done over 2,000 ASHRAE level 2 audits for multifamily buildings. I think I lead the league in that. During Sandy, I did a lot of stuff on resilience in affected communities. And when things are broken, I kind of write specifications to say how to fix them. So I'm a field person that solves problems.
Well, if you do 17 buildings today, if everybody listens to you, that solves a lot. That saves us a lot of energy. So thank you.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to nail boards over holes.
Am I safe saying that you've saved thousands of megawatts of electricity in New York State?
Probably billions, but let's keep it to thousands for now. I think I've saved a lot more oil and gas than I have electricity, because the electric stuff is kind of, people in the buildings, but I'm trying to cut down the use of, you know, heat and hot water. That's the big user, and water in buildings.
Well, how much of the fuel that is used to generate electricity becomes waste heat before it gets to become to electricity? I never see that data when I read about emissions of power plants.
Well, you know, that's a really interesting question, Ken, because one of the reasons that I got into this field was, learning about how wasteful electricity plants are. And I saw this chart in a book that I looked at that I got years ago, that most power plants from the plant, most electricity from the plant to the plug is about 35 to 40% efficient. You use a lot of efficiency at the plant. Power plants have 40 to maybe 60% efficiency. You lose another 8% in transmission. So electricity as a fuel is very inefficient. And therefore, if we're using a carbon-based fuel like oil or gas, and in New York City, 71% of our fuel is gas generated, of our electricity is gas generated, last I looked. And we're not much better across the Northeast, except if you're in Maine or Vermont. But there's a long way that we have to go to get more renewables in the system, and we're all in favor of renewables. But we can't focus on using electricity until we start conserving a whole lot more first. And that's conserving oil and gas and electric.
The more you conserve, the less energy of any form you need. Even the renewables go further if you've conserved as much as you can first.
I can't say it better than that. My first meeting with the Metropolitan Solar Energy Society a long, long time ago, I met the president there, and he was a very smart guy, God rest his soul, Bill Bobenhausen. And I said to him, he asked me what I wanted to do, and I said, I want to put solar on buildings in New York City. And he said to me, wouldn't it be better if we made the buildings more efficient first, so that solar would pick up more of the load? And I couldn't believe how simple his premise was. And it's become my mantra ever since. I go into buildings all the time. Excuse me, I'm fighting a cold in every possible way. But I go in, I speak to human beings, and they say to me, what do you do? And I say, I make buildings more energy efficient. And they say, oh, you do solar? You do windows? And I'm like, no, I take the existing load in the buildings and I make it smaller. I make the boilers more efficient. I air seal the buildings to make them tighter, not so tight that we can't breathe. You know, I do a lot of things to make people more comfortable and run the buildings more efficiently.
But how much money are you saving people?
I've had buildings where I've gone in and wrote a very simple scope of work, and we've saved over 50% in hot water usage, over 30 to 40% in heating usage. I mean, it all depends on the building. If the building uses a lot of energy, which we call a pig, it's really easy to fix a pig. If the building's very efficient to start with, it's very difficult to make it more efficient. you can make all buildings more efficient, but I really like going through buildings. These 17 buildings I'm going through today, I looked at all their energy use yesterday, and they're all pigs. But it's a client that has residential and commercial buildings, and I guarantee I'm going to walk by the residential buildings today. I don't have access. I won't have the access to the buildings till next week, so I'm just doing a walkthrough. But I guarantee you, I'm going to see 20 to 50% of the windows open in the building, because we always horrifically overheat our buildings.
Yeah, I think it's rather fascinating to think about that. And I think that the building owners and the building managers don't think they're overheating the building. They blame the tenants for opening the window.
Ken, that's absolutely perfect. When I do an energy audit of a multifamily residential building, I always make sure the owner is there with me. And I say to him, the minute the temperature drops below 55, the heat comes on. But the heat comes on full blast, because they haven't properly calibrated their boilers, their hot water makers, their timing devices. And that's a very simple thing to do. And I say to the owner, do you see all the open windows here? He's like, yeah, stupid tenants won't shut their radiators off. And I say, no, stupid owner won't learn how to operate the boiler. And so we go down and we look at the boiler and bring the super. And the owner is like, I can't believe how easy that was. And the super routinely says things like, yeah, I've been trying to get you to change these settings for a long time, but you tell me just to run everything at full blast.
Interesting. Yep.
So it can be that simple.
It's always
that simple.
It's always that simple.
It's always that simple. It's I'm going to on Friday, I'm meeting with these owners, and I'm going to just like talk about the buildings that I saw today. And they have a staff of 10 that I'm going to meet with. And I'm sure it's going to be so much fun, because I take pictures, and, you know, they see pictures of their buildings and they're like, oh, and some of the buildings have public access. So I'm going to go in them with a thermometer today. And if you go into a building and it's, 80 degrees, you need to wonder about it. You know, if everyone walks into the building and they're immediately taking every excess piece of clothing off because they're overheated, you know, this is a problem.
Yeah.
So, and we were not talking about, you know, doing with less. It's just doing, having less waste.
Right. It's most buildings are so simple. I'll give you a perfect example. I have friends all the time that say to me, oh, my apartment's overheated. And so my dear friends, Kevin and Michelle, who are listening in today, they said, my super came and gave me a thermostatic radiator valve, and they showed me a picture. They installed it wrong, so it can't work. And I was like, yeah. So a lot of this stuff is idiot-proof, you know. But in a lot of buildings, I'm talking about really simple things. You know, I always say when I walk through a building, if the building's like 50,000 square feet or under, I can usually walk through it in an hour to 2 hours and find out where the big problem is. Sometimes it's a hole so huge you can't believe it. Sometimes it's the ventilation system is running full blast 24 hours a day and sucking heat out of the building. Sometimes it's the boiler running on manual. It's just, you know, you walk through and suddenly you go, aha, that's the aha moment. So, you know, I'm trying to do that, but I think there's a lot of things we can do. You know, we're all environmentalists on this show, and we all are trying to save the environment. We're trying to avoid us being underwater. So, the little things we do, like recycling, I know that seems so small, but, everything that doesn't go to a landfill doesn't generate methane. And every time we can do anything to recover methane, the sewage treatment plants in this city and everywhere in the country either dump or flare methane way too often. And that methane can be collected and used to run a small generating plant that can provide heat and electricity for these sewage treatment plants. And they've done it in sewage treatment plants in the city. It's very expensive to get going, but they're trying to get it done in more of the buildings, in more of the sewage treatment plants. I wish more people would compost. Composting
Let's go into more details in a couple of minutes. You're listening to Ecologic, WBAI's premier environmental show, right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. I'm Ken Gale.
And I'm Sally Geller.
And for Women's History Month, we have a thumb drive with 50 hours of programs by and about important women. This month only, new BAI buddies get the Women's History Drive as thanks for their generous commitment. We also have a 3-CD set, Women in the Environment, for a $75 pledge, which includes Rachel Carson, Lily Tomlin, Dr. Helen Caldicott, and Vandana Shiva. Call 212-209-2950 or go to give2wbai.org.
And back to our guest, Andy Padian. Recycling is good, reuse is better, but tell us more about composting. That's something that you all in New York City do curbside, and we don't out here in most of Jersey yet.
Well, you can compost in your backyard. You can compost. Yeah. I have a small community garden a block from my house, thankfully, and I built a composting bin that's very simple, and me and a couple of my neighbors dump all our compost in there. And in about 2 weeks, when I'm getting ready to turn the garden over, I'm just going to pick it up and dump the compost and turn my garden over. You know, it's really good for my garden space is 8 feet by 8 feet. Not, it isn't even that, it's 6 by 6, but I can turn that over every year and reuse it. And I recently, heard this interview with a guy named, Oliver Franklin Wallace, and he wrote a book called Wasteland, The Dirty Truth About What We Throw Away. And it was very interesting to me that he said that if it were a country, food waste would be the third highest emitter of greenhouse gases on Earth, behind only China and the United States. So there's really big things that we can do. You know, the methane recovery at the sewage treatment plants, the recycling, which hopefully gets a lot of reuse done. I've got a client that I was a commercial client that I'm working with now, and they've been around for 20 years, 20, 30 years almost. And so I toured their office the other day, and they had buckets and buckets and, oh, excuse me, brown box file cabinets full of papers. And I'm like, whose are those? Oh, those are our old papers. What are you going to do with them? We don't know. Do you need any of them? No. So I called my friend at the Cellulose Manufacturers Association, and I'm like, look, is there a cellulose manufacturer? Cellulose is an insulation product made from newspaper and newsprint and paper and cardboard boxes. Mm-hmm. And I'm waiting to find a developer or a cellulose manufacturer who will come and pick up all this stuff and turn it into cellulose insulation, which is a wonderful insulation product.
Huh. Yeah.
So, you know, it's reusing more stuff.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
Now we've been talking a lot about what people do in their own homes. What about policy changes? What can we do to tell our, what can we tell our politicians they should be doing?
Will it do any good?
We have some good ones.
Yes, we do. I think that we need more investment in efficiency and higher tax breaks for efficiency than anything else. What I'd really like our politicians to do is to make a very simple website or flowchart that tells the average New Yorker, the average American, here is my building. What incentives are available to make my building more energy efficient? And when I get a client now, I find that I have to do all the research on the utility programs that are available, the programs that are available from the state. Some of those you can't use both of them at the same time. The loans or grants that you can get, understanding the taxes in here, the difference between like a regular tax credit and a refundable tax credit, these stupid little financial things so that it would be easy. Many years ago, there was a book for multifamily owners for every program available for them to make their buildings more energy efficient.
Oh,
that book was outdated. It was outdated, you know, a year after it was made.
Yeah.
Those programs, unfortunately, always change. And if you're a consultant and you're dealing with the programs and you're dealing with an owner, all of a sudden one of the state agencies says, oh, that program's changed now. And then the utility says, oh, that program's changed now. So typically they keep you in the program that you were in and they let you finish. But the bureaucracy that's involved with taking advantage of incentives to make your buildings more energy efficient is frightening. The other thing away from our politicians is the banks. I worked for a bank for 10 years. They were wonderful people. They're really trying to do God's work. And on top of that, they refinance the debt in a lot of buildings. When you refinance the debt in the buildings, you're saying, okay, my mortgage is just about up. I'm going to, you know, fix the hallways. I'm going to do some things to make the build, you know, I'm going to point the exterior of the building.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they do things for 5 and 10 and 15 year priorities in the building, but right. No one, excuse me, very few people include in there, let's include an energy retrofit. And a lot of times if you include an energy retrofit in that and a retrofit that reduces water use in the building at the same time, and I just want to say for multifamily buildings in New York State, water typically costs twice what oil or gas costs. Let me repeat that.
Yeah.
Water typically costs more, twice as much as the oil or gas to centrally heat or heat and hot water the building. So if we're doing this retrofit, when we refinance the debt on the building, and if you can do it when you refinance the debt on your single family home, if you put in the energy efficiency stuff, air seal the attic, add insulation to the attic, have people come in and blow insulation into the walls, pick up the efficiency of your furnace or boiler from 50% to 94%. Now, do all these things to make your building more energy efficient. Everybody thinks that windows are the most cost-effective thing to do. They are not. They increase the value of the house, but if you're going to change your windows in the building, you have to change from a fairly crappy window to a really good window that will last you 50 years. So if you're going to do that whole package, it's going to cost you a lot, but the building will be incredibly more efficient. And you may take this gigantic boiler that you have in the basement and reduce the size of it by 75%. You may, we did a whole bunch of buildings in Auburn, New York, and we reduced the energy use of their hot water makers by 50% because we went from 50% efficient hot water makers to 94% efficient hot water makers.
Uh-huh.
Well, that means you need half as many hot water makers. So it's that, you know, series of things. And in almost every state, there's energy audit programs, there's You know, people that'll come in. None of it is free anymore, but it's really, really well priced. And I'm walking through a lot of my friends' houses in New York State. I meet the energy auditor at the building. I make sure they're looking at all the right things. And typically the owner gets a slightly better report.
Now, you mentioned blowing insulation into the wall. A friend of mine was told that he had to tear his wall down to add insulation.
My friend John always says, a contractor will never sell something before their product. And I have a friend that had an energy audit done. It was a pretty good energy audit. And the guy that was there was pretty good. And he was very knowledgeable. And I said, they had existing fiberglass in the walls. And I'm a fan of cellulose insulation, as I said earlier, which is made from recycled paper and fire treated, so that when you blow it in the walls, it actually increases the fire value in the walls. It reduces vermin being able to go through the walls, and it makes the building tighter. And I said to him, could you do cellulose and blow it in behind the fiberglass, a common practice in the United States? And he said, no, but we can tear all of the sheetrock off, pull out all of the fiberglass, and foam all the interior walls. I said, okay, what's the price of that? $76,000. And I said, well, is it cost effective? He said, no. So why are you suggesting it, and why can't we do the cellulose thing? He gave some excuse, but your friend doesn't have to tear out. That might be a piece of it. I don't want to say that everyone's a charlatan, but I would like to talk to your friend, Ken, when the person said they had to tear all their walls down, because I hear that a lot. I have friends that just bought a house in upstate New York and near Syracuse, so it's cold there. And there, you know, the engineer's report didn't have anything to do with energy efficiency in the buildings, but the building is 50 years old, so they need to change all the shingles in the building. I'm like, stop. Let's put exterior insulation on before we put the shingles on, and then we'll have a much tighter, much better building. Yeah. So, fortunately, they have a very good energy auditor in their region that I know, and he's going to go and see it. But I think that, you know, all of these government programs to do energy audits, I actually, instead of calling one of them for my friends, I write a proposal that just says, here's the things I want looked at in the building. And the energy auditor says, the energy auditor comes back and says, yes, I'm going to look at all that stuff. And then they price the job and then they come back. So I've had a much better quality of energy audit when you just, I know this isn't everybody's, you know, area of expertise. Mm-hmm. But if we can just speak to people in very simple terms and say, I don't want a product. I don't want windows. I don't want foam. I don't want boiler. I don't want ducts. I want the most efficient things I can do in my buildings. And in New York City, for large building owners, when we get these energy audits through the various local laws, and there's Local Law 84 and Local Law 86 and Local Law 97, and there's a lot of regulations to follow. But what I keep telling large building owners is, if you're going to pay someone, and you have to pay someone to do one of these reports, don't necessarily go to the low bid contractor. Go to the contractor that will give you a very simple, readable report that tells you, here's the really cost effective things to do, and here's the things that will significantly reduce your carbon, so that it'll reduce your grade on your building. New York City buildings are rated A through F. And if you get an A, you don't pay fines. If you get an F, you pay fines. And the city is giving people a little bit of leeway to do this now to reach the 2030 goals. But But in order to reach the 2030 goals that everyone wants you to reach, you have to have a scope of work and a financing package to be exempt from fines until 2030. And you need someone, you need a consulting company who can look at the energy efficiency in the building, look at the cost effective things to do, and look at the things that will most significantly reduce your carbon. And then as a package, if they can give that to you, it makes you a better informed owner.
Now, you said readable report. Do you have to emphasize readable?
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to say what government entity it is, but I was required. I was doing an audit for one of the largest residential buildings in New York City many years ago. I don't want to say its name, but its initials are Peter Cooper Village Stuyvesant Town. And I was required by the government entity to write a 104-page report. I am not exaggerating that one bit, including wow. the color of brick in the building, where the brick was mined from, where the original parts from the building came from. Trust me on this. And the audit was due to the owners of the building, and I called them and said, I'm just finishing up the executive summary. I'll have it to you tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. And the guy said to me, how long is the executive summary? And I said, it's 3 pages. And he said, make it one. And that's typical owners of any kind. They don't want a research project. They don't want a PhD thesis. They want a very simple one pager. Here's what's wrong in the building and here's how to fix it.
Yeah,
here's the thing you should do first.
They want action items. They want to know what they can do, right?
Action. I just wrote down action items. That's really good.
Yeah.
I'm going to use that.
Okay.
Because people
hey,
use
Sally.
There's so much there's so much energy speak in the energy world. You know, we invented the word weatherization.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, now people kind of know what weatherization is. It was invented by the term was invented by the Carter administration, but couldn't we just say increased efficiency?
Yeah.
No, I was at a conference last week, the Northeast Sustainable Energy Association, and I showed a picture of Jimmy Carter and people applauded. And I'm like, mm-hmm. thank God you applauded. You know, people rate him as one of the worst presidents ever. However, he created the Department of Energy, and most people that are in the energy business today are in the energy business because of Jimmy Carter and his policies that went from the Department of Energy to each state, to each municipality. And so I have my job because of Jimmy Carter. I'm in the business because of Jimmy Carter. But I think that we need to, I try to dumb down everything that I say to owners, and I talk to rooms full of owners, and I say, okay, today we're going to talk about green. And I reach into my pocket and I pull out a wad of bills and I say, but this is the only green I want to talk to you about, because you can talk about carbon, you can talk about green, you can talk about the environment, but all of this work depends upon cash flow. And you can't make a $55,000 investment in a single family house that will not increase the value of the house and cut the energy use to virtually nothing. An owner won't be interested in it. You can put, I did an audit of a friend's building near Poughkeepsie, and I thought that this building would really be ready for heat pumps because it was running on oil. And the energy auditor, like I said, was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But air sealing the house, sealing up the leaks in the attic, number one, that was the most cost-effective thing to do. And I'm a big believer in this. Decades ago, my parents lived in a small house in New Jersey, and I had just read a magazine article from a magazine that's no more around called new shelter. And it was these two Canadian guys that said, you know what, if you look, if you go up in the attic in most single family homes and you look around the pink insulation, you'll see black spots in the pink insulation. That's air escaping from below. And if you just pull the insulation back, you'll see that it's a pipe or it's an electrical line. And if you just take a little foam and foam that up and close it, and I was like, that can't be too hard. So I spent a weekend doing it at my parents' house. The most expensive thing to do the work was my dad had to buy me two cases of beer because it was so hot up there. But I finished the work. I got it done. And my parents' gas bill went down 40%.
Wow.
The gas company accused my father of tampering with the gas meter. So that warmed my soul. So it's this kind of thing where you can do the really simple stuff. But in this building that my friend has in Poughkeepsie, they identified air sealing the house at the top is going to be the most cost effective thing to do. Great. I agree with them 100%. They said solar is the second most cost effective thing to do. And that's usually not the case. But the reason why it is this is a private home. They have really high electric use. They have a fully exposed roof. They have a lot of roof space. And whatever electricity they don't use can get sold back to the grid, and they get a huge tax break for it. So the combination of selling electricity back to the grid, getting the electricity back for their work, doing the entire package, insulating the house first, putting the solar on was really cost effective. And I repeat, that is typically not the case that it's the most cost effective thing to do. And then switching the building over to heat pumps. And so the building now is tighter. It's going to be slightly less expensive to operate it, but I think they're going to make enough money on the electricity that they sell back to the grid that
it'll be a good thing.
And it will be more comfortable, yes.
I love asking energy people, is there any way to make an efficient building be less comfortable? And they laugh at the question because it doesn't seem to be possible.
I have a nerd friend in the field. I have a lot of nerd friends in the field. But I have a nerd friend in the field that many years ago said to me, let's try to make the building more comfortable. Let's make the tenants feel better in the building. Let's reduce drafts. When we insulate the walls, we get the vermin out of the apartments. You know, it's all of this stuff. We insulate. We increase the efficiency of the hot water maker. We increase the efficiency of the boiler. We make sure that the apartments aren't overheated. We do all this stuff to increase comfort, and energy efficiency happens accidentally. And energy efficiency is really... it's really about increasing comfort. And if you make people more comfortable, or you reduce their work, this building that we did in Auburn, New York, it's a huge complex. And I was saying earlier how we changed the hot water makers out in there. But they had a
Andy Padian makes people happy.
I wouldn't go that far, no.
Well, if you're making where they live more comfortable, you're making them happier.
Maybe. I think it's a hard road.
All right, you can't say it, but I can. Anyway, you're okay. Listening to Ecologic, WBAI's premier environmental show, right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. I'm Ken Gale.
And I'm Sally Gellert. Did you get your copy of Totally Devoted by our recent guest, Anthony Pierleone, and his wife, Shannon? You can find that book and our other premiums on give2wbai.org.
And now we welcome your calls for Andy Padian. The number to call in is 212-209-2877. That's 212-209-2877. And when you choose to become our Ecology BAI buddy, you're giving us a reliable source of support that we can depend on, just as you can depend on WBAI. We're here for you all the time, and you'll be helping to ensure that WBAI continues to broadcast. Just $10 or $15 a month, more if you can, enables people to listen wherever they are.
You can go to Give to WBAI and put Eco-Logic in the search box. to choose from our premiums or call 212-209-2950 to make your donation today. If you want, you can send a check or money order for your membership and or premiums. Mail to WBAI Radio, Attention Membership, 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, 11217. That's 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, 11217.
You know, going back to comfort, you know, I'm thinking about if you have your window open in the winter, then you don't want to sit anywhere near that window. So you just lost a part of where you live. And if your heat source is, you know, your furnace or whatever is putting out too much heat, you don't want to be in that part of your home either. So when you make the home more comfortable, you're also increasing the living space.
Overheated or not, every once in a while, I want to open the windows and get some fresh air in. So I have to fight that. And I'm concerned about the amount of overheating we have in buildings.
Sure.
And how many open windows we have in buildings. And it's very simple to solve, but it takes typically it takes a good service person to do it. And what I say to people all the time is, if you're a building owner, don't call your service company, or you're a single family homeowner, whatever. Don't call your service company on October 30th and say, hey, can you come and, you know, fix my furnace or fix my boiler or, you know, adjust everything. That's when they're the busiest. Mm-hmm. But if you call them in the summer, they'll come. They have a lot of time on their hands. You know, be nice to them, buy them a sandwich, buy them a beer, sit down with them for an hour. You'll get the best lesson on how to fix your building. I've seen this in low-income multifamily buildings in the Bronx, and my friend lives in a house in Springfield, and I saw that there was something wrong with their furnace. She had never had a furnace guy come to her house in the 5 years since she owned it. The guy came over, he looked at everything, gave all the filters, changed the pump that we needed to, everything was done in like 2 hours. And he sat there and told me everything that we needed to do. It was great.
You know, you mentioned low-income buildings, and I think that efficiency is even more important for a low-income person, because the less money you make, but your energy bill is going to be the same as a person who makes more. So it's a bigger percentage of your income is going to the utility. So efficiency is even more important the less money you're making.
In New York City, most low-income tenants, most low-income people live in apartment buildings, and most of them just pay an electric bill. And I looked at my electricity the other day. I'm paying... Electricity is 40 cents a kilowatt hour in New York City for me. And I use very, 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 the average electric client for Con Edison uses about 300 kilowatt hours in a month. I use under 100. That's because I turn the lights off. That's because I've converted everything, all my lights to LEDs. There's turning the stuff off, you know, not running the TV when you're not in the room. You know, all of these, I go into people's houses and low income apartments. There's three TVs in the room, in the house, and they're all on in rooms where nobody is. And I get it. It's a companion, you know, but
it's a costly one.
But if you want a companion,
it's a costly one.
A radio is cheaper than a TV. And you get the same kind of companionship. So listen to BAI all the time instead of putting the TV on.
There you go. Save energy.
Ken, let's not talk about your and my obsession with radio and comic books and baseball and all the weird things that people don't give a rat's rear end about. You know?
Okay. We have calls coming. We have a call
on the energy efficiency.
Okay. Using this. And anyway, we do have a caller, so you can call 212-209-2877, and you are on the air.
Good morning. I live in a double building in Harlem. It's a total of 10 stories.
Can you speak louder, please?
Oh, I'm sorry. 2 5-story buildings run on one boiler. And I keep trying to get us to be more energy efficient. The boilers may be 30 years old. It was here before I got here. Where would I find somebody to come do an assessment?
This is a
co-op. I neglected to say. I'm so sorry.
Oh, okay. Well, in the immortal words of one of my mentors, New York City cooperative apartment is a contradiction in terms.
Yeah.
Well. There are energy audits available through the New York State Energy Research and Development Authority and through Con Edison, provide. New York State Energy Research and Development Authority, NYSERDA. It's NYSERDA.org or Con Edison. And you can go on their website and find
it. What?
NYSERDA.org.
Okay.
Ken will give you my email offline and I'll take a walk up and see your building. Where is it exactly?
We're on 131st Street and 7th Avenue in Harlem.
Oh, that's real nearby. Okay. So Ken's going to give my email out at the end.
Yeah.
Drop me a line and I'll do a quick walkthrough. But typically in a co-op, your problem is cleaning and tuning the boiler and changing all the electric in the building. How many apartments are in the building?
It's 2 5-story buildings, and each one is a floor through. So there are 10 units, but
right.
It's 2 buildings.
Okay. So you're under 25,000 square feet, so
just.
You're not tied into the local laws. Am I correct?
Yes, but just.
Oh. Okay. Lucky you.
Large.
So you're the kind of client I like because you want to save energy to save money. And water is a big thing in your building. So changing the toilets is going to be the most cost-effective thing you can do. Changing the shower heads is going to be the second most cost-effective thing you can do. And tuning the boiler and making sure it runs right is the next most cost-effective thing.
The boiler needs to be dealt with. I know that. Getting people to deal with it is another thing, but at least I'd have something to go on. Okay. But I will.
Is it oil or gas?
It's oil, number 2 oil.
Okay. If we can switch you over to gas right away, you'll reduce your carbon and you'll reduce your bills dramatically. It'll take a while, but you have to request it from Con Edison.
I thought that gas was horrible because of the fracking and because of the transport. I thought
oil
gas
is
was dreadful.
Oil
is
as bad or worse.
Oil is, let me just talk reality to you.
Yes.
Oil has more carbon in it, and it's dirtier than gas, and so it makes your boiler soot up faster, and therefore, when it soots up faster, it can't get the heat from the fuel that much, and so more heat goes up the chimney. So cleaning the boiler regularly is real important.
No, we
but,
do.
Gas is going to be about half the cost of oil right now.
And we are
depending
out of
on
time.
Your type. Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
We're out of time for the whole show. Thanks for joining us. And we'll be on next week on April 3rd at 10 a.m. And Andy's is at apadian@gmail.com. That's apadian@gmail.com and go to our website ecoradio.org and thank you Michael G. Haskins. We couldn't do this without your engineering. I'm Ken Gale.
And I'm Sally Gellert. Join us with Donna next Wednesday, April 3rd at 10 a.m. We're usually here Wednesdays at 10 a.m. between the excellent shows Covert Action Bulletin and Living for the City. Check our website for details. And thanks for being our listeners.
Somehow bright it shines on the nations of the earth. All who share this thing called life celebrate each day's rebirth.
So solar power, inexpensive energy. So
FM, WBAI, New York.
And this is dealing with the Hellenic world, but, you know, I'm really trying to trace the whole trajectory of what happened to women in Western Civ. How did women get knocked out of political and spiritual spheres of power is something that we're still deeply affected by. It really underlies a lot of the behaviors and values in late capitalist patriarchy that we're living in.
Max Deschoux, founder of the Suppressed History Archives, the global history of women. She will be our guest this Thursday, March 28th at 11 a.m. on Joy of Resistance to talk about her latest book, Women in Greek Mythography. That's Thursday, 11 a.m., Joy of Resistance. You'll never see the gods and goddesses of Greek mythology the same way again.
No corporation, government, religion, husband, father, brother, gonna define our existence. Joy.
What are you listening to?
What you are listening to?
Yeah, but I don't know what it is.
It's WBAI. Wow. Sounds weird.
Weird, but I like it.
I like it.
What is it?
It's WBAI.
I like it.
Did you honor your pledge?
To go low carb?
To send money to WBAI.
Oh, you mean write a check?
Yeah, I mean write a check.
I wrote it.
Well, now send it.
Oh, send it.
WBAI. I like it.
Yeah!